My name is Gloria Baker, and our session this morning is on ministry of the laity, support systems specifically. I live at Holden for a year, so I enjoy doing these things. Have sort of a captive audience up here. I work on the outside world. I have been a lay professional for the Lutheran Church, and I have worked in the secular world in administrative positions. Most recently, I was a office manager for an architectural firm in downtown Seattle. My volunteer work includes working for Laos in Ministry, which is a supportive fellowship of the LCA, and I'm on their national resource team. And I've done a lot of workshops and sessions on various aspects of the ministry of the laity. Day before yesterday, some of you were at my session on what is ministry, and we just discovered in the session that we are indeed all ministers, baptized to be ministers, baptized to be little Christ in the world. We are 99% of the ministers of the world. 1% is ordained. And it is our task to be about the work of Jesus in the world. And today, out of the session the other day, which talked a lot about dilemmas of trying to be good ministers in our daily lives in the world, we talked about needing support for that. We can only give so much of ourselves. We can only be ministers so hard that we also need to be replenished and ministered to ourselves. And I'm sure you all have felt ministered to somewhere along the line, in times of crisis, in times of need, or just through friendships and casual times together. These are all times of ministry. I'd like you to relax and maybe put both feet on the floor. We're going to take a little journey backward. I want you to think about the first person that you can remember in your life who was so very special, who ministered to you in a special way. It could be when you were a little child or when you were older. But who comes to mind? Who is that special person that first comes to mind for you as a very special friend? It could be a family member. Sometimes family members are best friends. Or it could be a friend who you knew or who you know now. Think of that person, what that person was like. What were the person's characteristics? What stood out for you? What did they look like? How did they react to you when you needed that person? Maybe think of a special event even that you recall that involved that person, a special time together. And the feelings that went along with being with that person. How special that was. And now let's come back to right now and turn to your neighbor. If your neighbor is a spouse, choose a different neighbor. And talk with each other about that special person that you recalled just now. And we'll take about 5 minutes to do that. Be sure each one gets a chance to share and be a good listener while you're listening to your partner. Okay?
Would you tell us what PLU stands for?
Pacific Lutheran University in Tacoma, Washington. I didn't go there, I just paid children to go there. sent money and kids.
She didn't go there. She just sent her.
How did it go? What were the characteristics of your special person?
Love.
Honesty.
Caring.
Patience.
Wanted to share Christ.
Share Christ. Others?
Helpful.
Others?
Good.
Unselfish.
Always be there.
Dependable.
Joyful.
Good listener.
Kind.
There was another word over here before.
Sense of humor.
Sense of humor.
Teacher.
Kind. Teacher.
Example.
Quite a list. Are you these things to anybody in return? Good. What were your stories? How far back did you go? Anybody? How far back into childhood?
3, 5.
Age 3? Was it a relative or a friend?
Relative.
A person that had much of these characteristics? What's the one outstanding thing about that special person that probably is encompassing of all?
Nurturing.
Love? That's probably true, isn't it? I always think of also the word time. Time to take to be that person. How do we get support nowadays? This is out of your past, I'm assuming. And it was a relative or a friend who probably lived fairly close. Telephones probably weren't used as much for that kind of support. How do people get support nowadays? Well, let's talk for a minute about how we used to get support then. All of these things that we characterized, did they live near you? Were they in your neighborhood?
Mm-hmm.
Relatives lived nearby. Grandparents often live in the same home even with us. Or in aunt or uncle,
neighbor
who was a neighbor forever, right? They didn't move around that much. In my neighborhood, I knew everybody on our road. It was in the country, and there were, you know, sometimes quite a distance between homes, but nobody ever moved away, and you always knew who everyone was, and it was a very comfortable, secure feeling to get on your bike and ride down the road and know everybody. Nowadays, do we know our neighbors very well?
No.
Some do, some are nodding because they've lived there a long time. Some have stable neighborhoods, others have very mobile neighborhoods. Or we live in apartments and we don't tend to know people who live next door even because they move so often, or we have to move often. It seems that the closer we live, just geographically or physically, the more privatized we get in order to keep our own space. Have you noticed that? Have you experienced that? In the country where people are dependent on neighbors who live a mile away, they know them fairly well. And you have your own space, your own geography, your own physical space. So you get to know that neighbor a mile away. But when you have just a small room, you don't have very much space. And in order to keep space, we don't get to know the people that are close to us across the wall. Have you found that to be true? Mm-hmm. Because we have that need.
A lot don't want you to know them.
That's right, right. Because they keep their space. Have you ever been in an elevator and everybody's looking up? Nobody says, hi, how are you? In an elevator, the space is too small. We have to have space. Yes?
I was raised in Chicago, and my mother says, you leave your neighbor alone, and they'll leave you alone.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I was raised that way.
Who was raised in the country where you got together with people for miles around to do things together just because you needed each other and wanted that? Because you feel isolated otherwise. Mm-hmm. One of the phenomenons of people. So in the old days, when were the old days? People depended on family, close friendships, to help them with most of their problems. Now children live miles and miles from grandparents, don't know their relatives, or they have lots of relatives that they didn't used to have. They may have two or three sets of parents. All kinds of relatives, but not really close relatives, because they are mixed families, mixed settings for families. Things are not like they used to be. So where does support happen nowadays?
At work.
Okay.
Counselors.
You know, we're talking about secular things, aren't we? And that's fine. Counselors. A lot of people go for counselors. Counseling. What are groups that are deliberately set up in our world to handle specific problems of people? Support groups. You want to say, want to identify?
For seniors or for bereaved or widowed.
Senior support groups for grief.
Groups for people that have cancer or
cancer support groups.
Child.
Okay.
AA groups.
Alcoholics Anonymous.
Group and social services that covers a lot of different.
Lutheran Social Services. I heard another one back here.
Weight losers.
Right, there's lots of support groups for losing weight.
Right, yeah.
Aren't there?
Drug abuse.
Gamblers Anonymous.
There's an anonymous for most anything, isn't there?
Overeaters,
another weight program. What about the newest one that I can think of that has really been in the news the last year or so and really made an impact on the whole country?
Child abuse.
I was thinking, we have that down. I was thinking of another one.
Hmm?
Mad.
Oh, yeah.
Haven't they had an impact? And it's been a wonderful impact, hasn't it? The number of deaths from drinking has dropped so drastically. It's just, I think, marvelous. I'm sure God had a very strong hand in all of that. So God does work through the secular world, for sure. How many of you have any of these support groups that meet within your church, that you let them have the building to do these wonderful things? Great, that's great. Anytime you get a chance, be sure to let these groups use your buildings.
Debt
trained expertise.
Debt consolidation.
Debt consolidation,
yeah.
Financial planning, that type of thing.
Or where they give the check to the account, the person, and they pay your bills and tell you what you can pay, or how much you can pay.
So that's sort of overspenders in us. That's right? Great. So there's something for any kind of problem, isn't there?
And the first thing they do is cut up the plastic.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I hadn't heard of that, but that's wonderful. What about in our church? Somebody mentioned church up here. What kind of support groups do you have there?
Circles.
Growing circles.
ALCW.
Circles. ALCW.
Youth groups.
Youth.
Singles groups.
Singles.
Choir.
Married couples.
Married couples.
Couples.
Sunday school.
Sunday school. Is that what you said?
Senior citizens.
Bible study. Quite a list. Want to read you something from the Auburn Institute report on empowering the laity for ministry about support groups. Traditionally, the parish setting provides support, although it is usually indirect. For example, it often takes the form of church school classes, Advent or Lenten groups, Bible studies, prayer meetings, church socials, and potluck suppers. Frequently, these activities have a task orientation, standing committees and groups, or they are organized for a limited time period to cope with a specific situation. Maybe it's stewardship or something like that, or a world hunger task force, or an Advent worship design group, some specifically special things for special times or special needs. And again, Bible studies, of course, are mostly groups that get together to study the Bible and think about the implications of that for their lives. Church socials often are centered around food, right? Coffee, fellowship after church is nice, but it's not very in-depth. People say, hi, how are you? And if they start to really tell you how they are, you kind of shy away because you really didn't want to hear all of it. You just wanted to be nice. So you say good morning and nice day and we're going to go see Aunt Tilly this afternoon and so long. So it's fun and it's nice and you get to greet the new people who might be visiting that Sunday. But nothing goes much beyond that. Although individual needs are met and group maintenance does occur, in other words, the group does hang together and get the task done, and they do it well, they usually happen as a byproduct of completing the task rather than by design. So if there's any real interaction that happens in that kind of setting, it's usually by accident and not by design, because the real design is involved with the task. The choir is really there to learn how to sing Sunday's anthem, right? And to get the hymns down pat so they can lead the congregation. They do have socials. We used to have birthdays, celebrations, and things. But again, it was pretty surface. Nobody really would support too much of any person. In these contexts, continuing or significant support is unlikely to occur. The local church can provide sufficient support for individuals actively engaged in ministry. Their needs can be met by small groups of Christians who covenant together to meet regularly and to share openly and honestly the content of their daily lives as they struggle to respond to Christ's call to ministry. Now, what does this mean? Support groups in a church. One lady said last week that she was feeling really good about belonging to a study called Search, which is a Bible study. And it was a way for her to be involved, and she was learning, and she felt fairly good about being there. Except the week before she came to Holden, she said she was so distraught from the day on the job that she couldn't stay in the class. She, after being there 10 minutes, she got up and walked out. Unless you have support sufficient for your daily lives, it's really hard sometimes to be involved in something else that is that has another kind of orientation. How many of you have just known that you've got to go to that committee meeting tonight, but you really didn't feel like it because you'd really had a rotten day, and you really needed to work on your day and not on what the committee was wanting to do that night? How many of you have had that experience? Several of us have. And it just doesn't work to try to set that aside, does it? We need to deal with our hurts. And we need people to help us with that. Just do any of you who raised your hand want to share a little bit about your experience with that and maybe what you did about it, if anything? Would you like to share?
Well, my job was being the church secretary, and so I was involved with a lot of the committees. And there were times when, after a day of meeting everybody else's needs, I felt like I needed to go home and meet some of my own. And yet, I was expected to be back there. And I guess about the only thing you do then is say, Lord, you know what the need is. Just give me grace for the next few hours, and he's always done that.
Mm-hmm. Good. Another one, I saw a hand back there. Would you care to share your story? Would you? Okay. Any others that can think of something that they'd like to share about a time that was really the pits and you had a meeting you had to go to? Christians are called to remain strong in adversity, but few of us can do it alone. God is with us, but we need as well the support of others to share the tough moments, to provide clear feedback, to give strong encouragement, to offer sound advice, and to issue necessary challenges. In these hard times, the two-dimensional aspect of the cross becomes significant. Its vertical line points upward and reminds us we are accountable to God and God is faithful to us. Its horizontal line points outward and reminds us we are also accountable to ourselves and to each other. How many of you know people who have a hard time with life sometimes and say they're going to go home and just pray about it? And that's the end of it. And they never talk to anybody else about it. They just go home and pray about it. And they build up inside because they really don't know what others are experiencing. And then they feel badly because they aren't really getting a clear-cut answer from God. He's not really telling them. But what does God encourage us to do? He encourages us to talk to others. That's one reason why counselors are in this world. That's one reason why we have each other in this world. We are not islands. And it's not just a lot of answers from God, because God works through other people. And one of our words up here is example. And it's so refreshing when we're down in the dumps to know there are others who get down in the dumps. And who do we go to when we need help with something? Oh, we know so-and-so had the same problem. Let's talk to that person and see how they handled it. I remember in a support group once, some friends were so delighted to find out that we had trouble raising our kids just as much as anybody else. They thought they were so perfect because they looked so perfect on church days. They looked so cute and they acted so perfect. And they were so happy to find out that they weren't perfect and that it was okay for theirs not to be perfect. And it's okay and nice to know that we're all human and that there isn't really anybody that's perfect, because we're not perfect, isn't it? I want to share with you something that Bill Deal, who wrote Thank God It's Monday, a book on Christianity and connecting faith and daily life. He wrote a paragraph about support groups. Once lay people have begun the process of integrating faith and life, it is essential that they become part of some type of support group. A typical support group consists of anywhere from 6 to 20 people. It is possible for two people to support each other, and many times that's what happens. And it is possible for a group to support each other. But such groups are the exception if they are larger than 20. The typical support group should meet on a regular schedule. The primary purpose of the Christian support group is to enable members to continue to grow in their faith. This happens in several ways. First, in the environment of a sharing community, the individuals are able to continue their contextual theologizing. That is, by sharing the experiences and problems of the week with others, they are helped to make connections between their faith and daily life. Moreover, as individual problems are discussed and suggestions for action are offered by the group, a certain accountability is established between the person and the support group. When my support group invests time and interest in one of my problems, I become accountable to them to follow through with some action and then report back to them. Secondly, the support group provides the setting for group study and discussion of ideas and issues. In our support group, we will frequently read and study a book together or spend time on a current issue, such as nuclear disarmament. Finally, the Christian support group provides a community in which the joys and hurts of each member can be shared by all. This cannot happen in a larger congregation. We consider our support groups to be part of our extended family. They always are invited to important family events such as weddings, special anniversaries, and other celebrations. Support groups can be organized for specific purposes such as Bible study, prayer, discussion, book study, or other special projects such as the sponsorship of a refugee family. These groups can draw from a single congregation or from a community. They can consist of adults or total family groups. Our weekly group is ecumenical. We have a family breakfast every other Sunday morning. On alternate Sunday evenings, the adults only meet for sharing and discussion. On the other hand, our monthly group always meets as families, usually for a Sunday evening supper and fellowship. Support groups can also be formed along professional or occupational lines. A group of doctors may meet every other Wednesday morning for breakfast and discussion of their work. Or a group of people in the same company may meet once a month for lunch to share their work experiences and see how their faith relates to them. Over the past 2 years, lay people from our congregation who work for large companies have met at times for lunch with our pastor. 6 of us at Bethlehem Steel did this several times. During the lunch, we shared problems of our particular work areas, while the pastor listened and played the role of theologian. He was not there to solve our problems. Each one of us had to determine our own course of action. This is Bill Deal's story of support groups that he has experienced. I, too, have been involved in support group ministry. I'd like to ask if you'd raise your hand if you have ever been in a support group that was just designed as a support group in your church. Any of you at all?
With a prayer group?
Prayer chain.
Yes, if there is time for mutual growth experience or sharing of problems. And prayer chains sometimes don't do that. Maybe yours did. Uh-huh. If it was just for prayer, that's pretty horizontal.
Uh-huh. We have one we call one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's calling on people who are incapacitated but able to be in their own home, possibly get meals on wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do have some that are assigned to us that are in nursing homes.
Mm-hmm. So you have a care and concern kind of group that does reach out to people who are in need. Yes. The benefits go both ways, don't they? For sure. Yes?
I've never been a part of a sharing group, but it seems to me that we have a problem with sharing our problems as coming out of a background that is rather stoic.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard people say that outside the church, say that the Christians seem to have no problems, you know. And I think we're afraid to say that, well, look,
mm-hmm.
This may be wrong, and I may be me.
I think you're right on. It's very difficult to share problems, isn't it? Partly because we feel like if we're Christian, we shouldn't have. If we're okay with God, then everything should be okay, shouldn't it? But is that really true? We're put here to live life, and life has its ups and downs. I remember reading horror stories in the about years ago when people who had children or a relative who was physically or mentally handicapped, they would lock them in the upstairs bedroom so nobody would find out. Do you remember reading or knowing of that kind of situation? How dreadful. How dreadful. Yes?
But I think I should continue to add that without a group, I feel a support in the church that is not organized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't want to leave the church.
No, exactly. God is our our
and
place
works
of
through individuals.
Right. Nelvin Voss talks about that in his book 7 Days a Week, which is a brand new book on ministry of the lady, and it's Faith in Action. He says about what you're talking about, the most important support is the presence of God in one's life, the trust that God cares about what you and I do each day. The trust frees a person to risk the possible loss of approval or status, and it also frees a person from depending totally on self, other people, and institutions for security. The belief in God's presence gives importance to what one does for and with other people. In such trust, a person has both a transcendent place in God's trust and a here and now place in this world, and out of that relationship, acts responsibly as a minister of Christ. And some questions that come from that still haunt us. Did I make the right decision? Did I do the right thing? Is it good enough? But the search for perfection is self-destruction. If we continue to ask this question, did I do it right? Was I good enough? The resulting guilt is overwhelming because we never do it perfect, do we? There's only one person in this world who ever did it perfect, and it sure isn't us. So we feel guilty because we aren't doing it good enough. At a recent 5-week seminar on faith and daily life attended by a dozen corporate executives, questions such as these were submitted in writing at the end of the session. Doesn't adherence to Christ's teaching preordain continuous frustration? Does the church really understand that I must make unchristian choices at work? Christians need to remind one another that they are not required to be successful, only faithful. Faithfulness implies a stick-to-itiveness, or, in the old phrase, a perseverance of faith. And one can forgive others and self, because God, first of all, forgives our mistakes and pride and wrong decisions and everything else. Forgiveness is not an abstract doctrine or a right, but a tangible and concrete need for imperfect Christians who are wrestling in their daily lives to live the faith they confess. So yes,
God ministers to us in the ordinary relationships in the world around us, as well as in the most unexpected moments through the most unlikely people. God's presence is real. Support is not only provided by persons from the past or from the Bible. It appears from a network of ministers of laity presently at work in the world, and thus the reason for the need of support groups within occupations. I know many of you who are working now no doubt have weekly meetings of groups to talk about the problems on the job or whatever, and to resolve differences or needs for problem solving. And those are sort of a way to deal with problems. They're not personal support, but necessarily, except how it relates to the job that you're trying to do. Staff meetings are essential in any organizational structure to iron out problems and deal with situations as a group. We have them here at Holden. We have one this afternoon at 5 o'clock. All the teaching staff will be sitting around the table, the fire pit, to talk about the next week's program and talk about any frustrations or situations that need resolving.
How do you sell this support programs to people who really need it?
Well, let me tell you about my story, how it happened. Thank you for bringing that in, because it's now time to talk about that.
Pay you later,
right. I went to a district meeting. I belong to the LCA, and we have district meetings twice a year. And at the fall district meeting, we have workshops. That's part of the structure of the meeting. And one workshop was Ministry of the Lady, and it talked about the need for support. It wasn't a support group workshop, but we talked about how we support each other in our work-a-day world. And the next morning was Sunday, and I went to the adult church school class that I belonged to, and the study that morning centered on Christians supporting each other. It was the scripture that talked about that, and so we had quite a discussion. And all of a sudden, at the end, I thought, since they're all primed, and I had just been to the workshop the day before, I said, if anybody's interested in hearing more about support group ministry, come to our house tonight at 7 o'clock, and we can talk about it. 18 people came. Nearly everyone in the class was there. And I was surprised. But it was evident that people need to be able to share with each other in a trusting way. So we talked about what support group ministry was all about, and I explained to them what it was. It usually involves 12 to 14 people. It can be a smaller group as 8, and in Bill Deal's book he said as many as 20. We ended up with about 12 to 14 of the 18 that initially came to the first meeting, simply because in the process they were moving away or their lives changed. So from the time we began, we had 18, and it dwindled to 12 to 14, which was a fine size for the group. It involves time of sharing, first getting to know each other. And this was all explained that evening in our house. A time of study. The group makes all the decisions about everything that you do. It is the only way to have a committed group. They decide on what to study, when and how long to meet, and where. We decided we would like to meet on Sunday evenings. It seemed to be the freest evening of all. We decided that we wanted to meet every week for a while, and we would renegotiate after 3 months if we wanted to continue as a group, or if we wanted to meet every week still, or just what we would do about it. So our commitment was only to 3 months, which is ample. You don't want to commit anybody for longer than that time, simply because people's schedules are busy. They want and need the opportunity to buy out of it after that time if it hasn't met their needs, and they need to be able to do that in a decent way. So you commit to a fairly short period of time. How long each session should be. We had a couple of families with young children. They had babysitting problems, and so we had to decide how long each week each session would be. We decided on an hour and a half, and we stuck to that so that people could trust even that part of it. The format for the sessions is an item that the whole group decides. We decided that after 10 minutes or so of informal sharing and getting back reacquainted after a week of busy work, that we would have about 20 minutes of study time. And we decided to use Keith Miller and Bruce Larson's series, The Edge of Adventure. Have any of you ever used that? It's a text book, a teacher's guide, and a cassette tape for each session. And it's the two of them dialoguing everyday problems. They are both pastors. Bruce Larson is now pastor at First Presbyterian University Presbyterian in Seattle. They've written several books. A Taste of New Wine, I think, was Keith Miller's first book. They're both excellent, and it's a very non-threatening kind of study, and it's dealing with everyday problems of life. And from that launching pad, if you will, people then in the group began to share, and they can relate to what these guys are saying on the tape. You know, it just is exactly what happened to me last week, you know, that it's just really neat. So it's a good launching device for discussion in the group. Especially, there's a time to talk about special concerns, if they have any. And people also need the freedom to pass. If they don't want to say anything that evening, that has to be okay. They may be not prepared to talk or think about anything. And that has to be okay. All things that are said in the group must remain in the group. Trust is essential, that nothing that is said goes beyond the group.
Could I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
Would the group go out and recruit a person who they felt needed support?
No. You would invite them, maybe?
At large, but not individually?
You could invite them individually if you're just beginning the support group. But once the group has started to meet, you would not bring in new people along the way, because the group forms such a special relationship that an outsider coming in between, who hasn't been on board...
Would always be an outsider. Would always be an outsider.
Exactly. It would not be comfortable. It would destroy the context of that particular group.
In other words, from periodically through the year, you would say we're starting a support group, who's interested?
Right, exactly. And theoretically, the ideal would be after this one particular group had met for 3 months, if they decided they would like to continue, you then covenant for another 3 month period. The first group went for a whole year. We recovenanted every 3 months and ended up wanting to be together a year. After the year was over, the decision was made that, you know, it's not good for a congregation to have little cliquey groups built up in a church. So the ideal would be for you to covenant to begin new groups, to be a leader, or to at least make sure a new group feels comfortable, because you've had the experience at that point, and so you're able then to share that experience with another group. And the ideal would be for the groups to grow. There'd be more and more and more groups.
Would you specify the mission of each group, like it would have different problems? Some would say debt, but all those who suffer a recent debt, would you set up a group for that? Or would you have one that had a loss of occupation or a change of occupation? Would you set up a special group just for those?
You could if there was the need. There were that many people who had recently gone through grief, death. You could even put together death and divorce, because the grieving is similar. If there were enough for that, and I would say minimum of 6, then yes, by all means. That would be perfectly great to do that. our support group ended up being several single people, several couples with small children, a woman going through divorce at the time, a couple of couples who had no children. So it was quite a variety. One young couple who had had no children had decided earlier never to have children. But because of the support group and hearing the discussions of others of us who had kids and the joys and traumas that go with that, they decided to have children. And now they have two kids. And the support group was the one that made them think, gee, what are we missing? We're missing all this frustration. And they decided to have children. So it was a good thing in our group to have it mixed. One woman was going through divorce. She went through divorce and remarriage during the time of our group meetings. And it was a very supportive thing to her. Even though she was the only one at the moment going through the problem, somehow the support was there for that. And she did have children also, so.
You certainly would be co-ed, right?
Oh, yeah. Though, so Bill Deal talks about a group of businessmen who got together to talk about their problems in that particular little focus of his. And they met and had breakfast and talked.
What was the focus of your support group? It sounds like it's kind of a catch-all.
It was strictly a support group for growth, personal growth, and growth in faith, and dealing with everyday life. And probably most of it centered around, if it had an umbrella, it would probably be family, dealing with family situations. I would say that would probably have been it. Though, as we talked and shared in the free time, there were lots of things related to work that people talked about. You're not ever categorized or kept from talking about what you want to talk about. And sometimes one person would have the largest, so to speak, problem, and we all supported that person that whole session. That whole meeting was centered around this person's dilemma rather than a smattering of each one. And sometimes that happened and sometimes it didn't. Yes?
Do you ever end up trying to tell these people with the problems how they can solve them, or does it just be at a standstill?
I remember a couple of times they wanted some ideas. We never said, you should do this. But we would say, here's what I did. And it takes the whole, and they can buy it or not.
It's the only way you can do it.
It's the only way you can do it. Mm-hmm. You're right. You can only talk about your personal experience. And you don't put anybody down for what they did do or what they might do. All you do is share your story.
There is a tendency, some people like to really give advice immediately, isn't it?
Exactly. And really, all they wanted to do was share their hurt, right? And they didn't really want advice. So, yeah, and you do lay out those kinds of rules of just basic human relations, which say you don't give advice and you don't put down. Good listening skills are essential. And good listening skills include I statements. My story is this, and this is what I did in a similar situation. And then they're free to buy it or not. We all need our freedom to say, that's for me or that's not for me.
Did you have one leader the whole time, or did you share leadership?
I led it for a good deal of the time, and then we began, as people got comfortable, it was a shared leadership. And another woman took it for a while, and then they passed it on. But I would say probably for the first 6 months at least, they wanted me to do it. So it was fine. It was more of a sharing thing. It was only leadership as far as pushing the button on the cassette and keeping the conversation intact and that type of thing. You had a question?
It seems to me this whole thing requires a large element of trust in each other.
Exactly. And that's why you can't have newcomers coming in between, because you develop the trust as you move along in the sessions. It didn't take us very long, because we all came from the same congregation, the same kind of Christian values. So it would be easier, I think, in a congregation than maybe in the secular world, because we were all coming from the same kind of value structure. And the people who wanted to be part of it knew they had to trust. You know, non-trusting people will not go near a support group. One couple in the group, the wife wanted to be part of the support group and thought it would be very valuable for the family, but the husband wouldn't have anything to do with it. So she said, let's meet the first time in my home, and my husband will sit in the kitchen and listen. I know he'll do that. And he did, and he never sat in the kitchen again. And he saw that it was comfortable, non-threatening, and trusting, and it was fine. So there are ways, you know, to work around that. We decided that we would change homes each week so everyone would have a chance to be hostess. And the one who hosted the home one week would provide the dessert for the next week. And that's how we kept it orderly and filling.
I think we have this sort of thing in our church, except that we three don't put on. We call them bread groups, and they're mostly younger people.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And they eat like that. They have food.
Mm-hmm. A lot of time young mothers will have groups together, won't they?
Well, these are couples too.
Couples.
Mm-hmm. And singles too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Are you familiar with Quest? Do you
I've heard about it.
A support group?
I've heard about it, and I don't know enough to say whether it is or not. Do you know more about it?
Not a lot, no. All I know is that we had it in our congregation for a while, and it really did create some very serious problems, because there was this closed feeling, and, you know, I don't know what you're doing, but whatever it is, I'm sure it isn't very good. You know, that type of suspicious feeling.
Yeah. That's why you mustn't do it too long, and you must always be open to a new group. When someone says, I want to be a part of what you're doing, you say to them, all you need is a few more couples and I'll come to your session and get you started, and you can have the same thing. And it's wonderful, because then they're included, and yet they don't destroy what your group is about, but they also have the opportunity to do it.
Okay.